that's just our signal.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's just our signal that the that whatever we say now is recorded. But we do editing afterwards.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, is the correct way you would like to be called is Dr. Is that the right title, Dr. Kaminsky?
Yes.
Okay, good. So this show starts with some music, and then I introduce the show, and then you, and I did read everything. I actually read the AHA policy statement, but I think that we're in new territory for my listeners. So we really have to almost start from scratch, you know, with what...
start at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll start with CRFs and what it is, okay?
Okay.
And why doctors don't do that, why it's not part of the protocol now, and what how they can get that information, because you make it seem easy and very non-invasive, so we'll get that out. But importantly, should a patient ask for it?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do, you know, in other words, what as an individual should we do to get that information for ourselves? Mm-hmm. And would you get that in these executive, they're very expensive executive, you know, exams? Is that what you have to do to get all this information? So that'll be the first part. And then we'll talk about the registry in the second part of the interview. When we, when we finish the... a segment, music plays, and then I kind of wrap it up. It goes off and goes into commercial. So if you hear music, you can stop, and you happen to be talking. I try to make it so that I'm talking. If you happen to be talking, you can just finish your sentence. They'll hear you over the music. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Ready to go? Good. Stuart, we are good. Okay, so 17 seconds of silence, and then we go. And the first segment is 11 minutes. Okay, very good. We're ready.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
Yeah, because maybe he's in denial. He sees hair on his head and not his shoulders. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg. This is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And, among that, you're hearing in the background is Dr. Leonard Kaminsky. He's the John and Janice Fisher Distinguished Professor of Wellness and Exercise Science. You didn't know there was such a thing, right, folks? At Ball State University. And he's going to talk about something that we are not aware of, that we should all be aware of, and it's time to be aware of. And that is this incredible connection between our longevity, our heart, our respiratory system, and why we know so little about it. I'm just going to introduce this guest by saying that at NYU there is a wonderful weekend. It's called the Science Weekend. And you can go and you can learn anything from the biology of birds to outer space. I went to the longevity presentations, and the professors there looked at us, the scientists looked at us and said one thing, Dr. Kaminsky. They said, longevity, longevity, you're all going to die of a heart attack. That was the first thing that came out of their mouth, and I became aware of that incredible connection between longevity and what you talk about. So let's get right down to it. You are hoping that we will begin to measure and pay attention to certain bodily functions and organs. Explain your mission when it comes to our understanding our longevity, heart, and respiratory system.
Okay, very good. Well, yes, the key measure that we are promoting, and I'm part of a group that recently published a position statement in the American Heart Association Journal, and the variable that we think is very important is called cardiorespiratory fitness. And what cardiorespiratory fitness, or we could just use the term fitness from here on, it'd be much simpler to just say fitness, is really it's a measure of the overall functional ability of the body. And the real, I think, value of this one measure that really expresses why it's so important is cardiorespiratory fitness is actually made up of or derived from the key organ systems in the body. So obviously the heart pumping blood to all the different tissues and organs in the body, the lungs bringing oxygen in from this atmosphere as we're breathing it, which then gets into the blood that the heart's pumping and gets circulated to those organs and systems. And then what do we need to function? We need our muscles to be able to function. So it's really supplying those muscles with the oxygen or energy they need to be able to power the activities that we choose to do. So this one measure encompasses all three of those major organ systems, and it does it in kind of this interactive way that it's really just a fascinating thing when you break it down to look at it that way.
So, you know, things become fashionable. Like there was a time that nobody ever heard of their body mass index, the BMI.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody, they don't want to know how much they weigh. They want to know their BMI. You think this will be something like that to physically measure our fitness? Is it going to catch on? And can we find out from our doctor? How come we don't know this? We know our temperature, our blood pressure. We know if we have a blood pressure problem. Why is it under the radar when it seems to be our whole system?
Yeah, well, certainly I do think it is one that will hopefully in the very near future become commonplace in clinical practice. So as we as patients go to see our doctor, hopefully just for a checkup, but even if we're having some other problems, this would be something that would be routinely assessed by them. You know, the answer to the question why physicians don't do this is it's as simple as they don't get trained to do this in medical school. You know, unfortunately, they don't get trained in a lot of lifestyle-related things, and the two primary lifestyle-related things that affect our health the most are how we move, so our physical activity and our exercise habits. You know, they don't have any training in that. And then, you know, what do we consume as far as our dietary habits? So they get little, if any, training in that. And that's not in any discredit. They've got wonderful things they do and get trained in. It's just not been a part of the regular training. And that is starting to evolve and change, too, where more and more medical schools are starting to look at these options and the importance of lifestyle behaviors for health. So hopefully in the future they'll get that as part of their training and then start seeing that as something that they need to be communicating with their patients about.
So at this time, though, let's say, you know, many of my listeners are on Medicare. They're 65 or older. Almost all of them take very good care of themselves. They do get checkups constantly. Can they ask for this measure? And if they do ask for it, how does the doctor get that measure?
Okay. Well, you know, hopefully their doctors are talking to them. If they're asking about what can I do to stay healthy and live a longer and a good functioning life, have a good quality of life while I'm still on this earth. Hopefully they're talking to them about, you know, some dietary habits and physical activity habits. And one other key to think about with this measure we're talking about, fitness, is physical activity is the behavior we practice. So do we choose today to get up and move about or maybe take a walk or get on a cycle and take a ride to get some exercise? You know, that's a behavior that is what fitness is. It's the measure of that. You know, how is the body responding and how capable is it? You know, I think that's another key distinction that needs to be worked in, and hopefully so the physician's talking about their physical activity, hopefully, and then the next step would be how is this physical activity affecting me, and that's the outcome measure of fitness. Right now, what we have, through evidence that's been accumulated through the years, are advocating is that there is a good, simple way to estimate this fitness variable, and it could be estimated from things that our doctors have as a regular part of the checkup that they would have with people coming in, and kind of the principal things are certainly our age and gender are going to be part of that prediction, but beyond that, what is our body weight, maybe if they get a little more sophisticated with that and measure our waist circumference, which is a good predictor of potential health outcomes. Some of the predictions have a resting heart rate and a resting blood pressure that are factored into that, which, again, at any checkup that we go to, they would have that. So the best thing that we would advocate for is that all these things that are typical measures that are already in the medical system kind of just be programmed into that electronic medical record, into this equation. And so as the physician's entering all the basic information they get on the patient, it would then pop up this estimated fitness value, and it would be right there for them to be able to communicate to the patient.
So actually what I'm hearing is it's a compendium of fairly logical things. Your age,
yes.
Your gender, your blood pressure, maybe you say very interestingly, not so much your body type, the amount of fat that's around the organs, so that would be measured by your middle, what we might call your gut.
Right.
And then all of this is put in a formula that your group recommends. And we could see if we're improving or if we're deproving with age. But it seems to me then that the next question is, even without that measure, what I'm hearing from you is that you can improve this part of your system, the respiratory and heart circulation, through exercise and through nutrition, which is what we hear all the time anyway about longevity.
Right.
But you're really saying that there's a very big nexus between how we function from that point of view and our longevity. Have there been studies that show that? Or, you know, as I said, that scientist who looked at us and said, you're all going to die of a heart attack. Is that the predominant reason that we pass away? Is that right?
Yes, certainly cardiovascular disease is still the number one cause of death in the Western world. So that is true. When they make that statement, unfortunately, that's true. We're all going to die of something. The mortality rate's still 100%. And cardiovascular disease is a big driver. You know, interestingly, with this fitness variable, when you look at other diseases beyond cardiovascular disease, so you start looking at cancer, respiratory disease, some of the others, this fitness variable is also very highly associated with all those different causes of death. So, in fact, most of the studies will actually break it down with an all-cause of death versus specific disease-specific causes of death, and fitness is kind of equally associated with all those. The other thing I would suggest is that when you compare the value of fitness to other kind of major traditional risk factors, so those being, you know, what is your cholesterol level, what's your blood pressure, do you smoke cigarettes, all those traditional things we know are not good for our health. Fitness is as strong, if not stronger, of a predictor than all those things.
Than even smoking. Well, we're going to take about those studies. We're going to take a little bit of a break now. And I know that Alzheimer's is also in that list that you mentioned that's very much affected by fitness. And people may be surprised that fitness is up there and maybe above smoking even for your longevity. All this, Dr. Kaminsky and his group have put together for the professionals, and we're bringing it to you here so that your awareness is really heightened when it comes to this. And maybe you can talk to your doctors about it. When we come back, we're going to find out what you can personally do in the arena of fitness and nutrition. And about a registry that Dr. Kaminsky is pushing for, and I think he's going to get it. Don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age, da 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 da.
Okay, so that was very good. We got a lot of the information out. Now we have the next segment is 8 or 9 minutes. It's a little shorter, but not too much. So I do want to talk about the registry. I want to talk about what they can do personally, and maybe it's the same old stuff we all know, get on the treadmill, but whatever you would recommend.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I did want to ask, there are a lot of very expensive, I get a lot of questions about this, there are a lot of very expensive whole health, I don't know if you would call it diagnostics, but people will pay $2,000 or $3,000, even $5,000, and they'll get everything checked in one center here in Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the Princeton, executive exam. Then there's medical tourism. I'm going to Thailand. And people go there and it's cheaper. So they go there for full body scans. Would this tell us the information you're talking about? Is this just a gimmick or a new trend in how we look at our health?
These more sophisticated screening things that are out there?
Yes. I even have personal clients, because we do financial planning for people, who just did thermage over their entire body. And the heat was telling them what was... I don't know. I'm confused.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of evolving things out there. And unfortunately for a lot of these, there's not a strong evidence base. And I'm certainly not an expert on all the different variations that are out there of what people could be trying. So it's really hard to sort out, could there be any benefit to these things
real
or
benefit.
Not. I can't say that there's not, but I can't, also side on that. Yeah, these are really strong measures. There's a lot of, particularly in the genetic type things that they're trying to tease down. And they've been on this for a long time, looking at some genetic factors and just really haven't come up with much. So, I'm more old school with, just the classic behaviors, what we practice every day we have the option. Yeah,
so we're going to
how we move.
Good. So we're going to be on the air in a minute. So I'm going to ask about that, what you call the classic behaviors. We'll ask about the registry. And is there any other point that you would like to make that I should know so we don't lose that? Is there anything you want them to read or a website or anything to go?
I guess in that, I don't know if I could pull it up. Dr. Wisloff, who's in the group, he does have that online calculator. For people that everybody could use, so I think that would be a tool that anybody could get online and see and use and get some information about.
Okay, give me a minute. Let me see if I can find that here.
I could look too here.
Because it's not highlighted in what was sent. It may be in there. Is it in the AHA policy report?
I think it's mentioned in there too. We've been doing so many different things. Let me see if I can pull it up online.
Big reports. I'm not finding it right away.
Yeah, here it is. It's how fit are you really? So world fitness level. I don't know if you've got a web access that you can look at now or not.
I can't, but is it, how fit are you really? Is that the,
it's just www.ntnu.edu. Then there's
good.
A / CREG / VO2 max.
Okay, so I'm going to tell them about it, and I'm going to put it on our website. Okay?
Okay.
I'm going to actually ask you to say it twice. I will put it on our website. Okay? Stuart, we are definitely ready to go. Okay, 10 seconds of silence.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit. Cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Hello, hello, hello. This- This is Adrienne Berg. We are back with Generation Bold and Dr. Leonard Kaminsky. He's a fellow of the American Heart Association, the American College of Sports Medicine, American Association of Cardiovascular and Pulmonary Rehabilitation. But it's a short show. I can't tell you everything that he does. And John and Janice Fisher, Distinguished Professor of Wellness and Exercise Science at Ball State University. And he's telling us about a measure of health that really he calls total fitness, that we are not getting a measure of from our doctors. Hopefully, with all that he's publishing in the field, we will soon be hearing about it more. It's going to become old hat. We're going to ask about our blood pressure. We're going to also ask about this new measure of fitness. But right now, we reintroduce Dr. Kaminsky because he was very clear. This also can be enhanced. The power of this, which has to do with your longevity, not just from heart disease, but Alzheimer's and so many other measures, can be enhanced with exercise and nutrition. But what kind of exercise and what kind of nutrition? So we throw that back to you, Doctor. What do you recommend at this point for people to just, from their lifestyle, improve their cardiovascular respiratory fitness?
Well, that's one I love talking about because it's so easy. It's really our bodies were designed to move, and the more we move, as long as it's something moving to get the heart pumping some blood. So simple activities, even what people might enjoy or be very capable of doing, getting out and just walking. You know, walking itself can do wonders for this. You know, if you want to keep advancing from that, so what we typically advocate people who've not been doing much activity at all, start with something simple, and the walking exercise is one. You know, if you have access to kind of exercise machines, sitting on an exercise cycle, you know, is another great way, or if you can cycle outdoors, that's a great way. So simple things that just get your body moving can do that. But as you start improving a little bit, if you want to continue improving, then certainly you need to start doing it a little bit longer, or, you know, probably the most important thing would be trying to work a little bit harder. You don't have to, you know, really work at the top level. You don't have to maximally exert yourself. But if you push yourself a little bit, so you start breathing a little bit harder, you know, working up a little bit of a sweat, that is called intensity of exercise, and that's a key variable to help you push that fitness a little bit higher.
All right. And, of course, nutrition, I guess it's the same old story. Have your very good proteins, your good carbs, and watch your weight. But you were very clear. You were talking about a measurement, the middle measurement. I was interested in that. It's not just the weight. It's where the weight is. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. It's called abdominal obesity, and sometimes they put it in descriptive terms like an apple shape versus a pear shape person. But it's that weight that we carry around our waist. And if you have excess weight there, and, you know, the excess weight means you have more fat tissue, that fat tissue is very active, meaning it gets into your circulation. Now it's carrying all these blood fats throughout the circulation, putting different places in the body. So it's just it's a very bad place to carry extra weight, and that is very highly associated with it. And the good news is if you start doing these lifestyle things, you know, practicing regular physical activity, exercise, and watching your diet a little bit, that's an area that can improve fairly quickly.
That's wonderful. Now, there is a way for you guys to measure what Dr. Kaminsky is talking about. There is an online measuring tool that was created by his team, and the website is very long, and I'm going to ask him to tell. He's going to read it right off his page there, as he did with me. But we are going to have that on our website, and that's an easy one. That's generationboldradio.com. So if you're listening to this and you're concerned and you want to see how you measure up with total fitness of this type, listen to this website, take it down. If you can't or you're in the car, go to generationboldradio.com starting Wednesday of next week, and you're going to see it there on the home page. So, Dr. Kaminsky, tell people how they can get this this measuring tool right now.
Okay, and I certainly want to give credit to my colleague, Dr. Ulrich Wisloff, and his group over in Norway who've created this. So the website, www.ntnu.edu/crc. CERG/VO2MAX.
It wasn't quite as bad as I thought, so say it one more time.
Okay, www.ntnu.edu/CERG/VO2MAX, and the two is the numerical two.
So we thank you for that, because this is a show that promotes longevity. It promotes successful aging. There's very few shows about it anywhere, actually, in the United States, considering the amount of people we're talking about, and that the fastest growing demographic are people over the age of 85. So we're here not just to be entertaining, although I hope every once in a while we're entertaining, but really to make changes in people's lives. So I appreciate you giving us that website. I know for sure we'd never be able to find it without you, and it will be on generationboldradio.com. All right, now let's get back to this registry. You're really pulling for something. And I read this incredible article, the AHA policy statement you were making, the importance of a cardiorespiratory fitness in the United States, the need for a national registry. I'm not sure we even know what a national registry is and why we need it. So explain this to us.
Sure. You know, when we start accumulating evidence in science and clinical practice, we need to know, you know, are there certain thresholds or numbers that are important. So like for our blood pressure, we know if our blood pressure is greater than 140 over 90, or if our LDL cholesterol is greater than 100. Unfortunately, we haven't had that with the fitness measures. So our group has been working on developing this, and we've kind of developed an acronym for it. We call it the FREND Registry, which is the Fitness Registry of the Importance of Exercise National Registry. And so, you know, what we have developed with this is we've got laboratories and clinics all throughout the country, and now we're starting to expand internationally, that have been making this measure. And we're actually pulling all this together in one site where we can now start getting what would be the threshold for what's important with this fitness measure. The good news is all the studies that have been done with individual groups have shown, regardless of how they've measured it, the lower your fitness, the more at risk you are. But what we're trying to get to is what is that actual threshold number for each person, because it will change as we get older, and it's certainly a little bit different between men and women. So we're just trying to put all that together, have that available.
Well, this is wonderful. And, of course, we've come to the end of our time together, but we never do. We always have information, articles, and so on our website, generationboldradio.com, provided to us by Dr. Kaminsky and his team. Of course, you're going to have that website on so you can measure yourself to the best of your ability on the computer. And one day, this is going to catch on, and just like we take our weight and we take our BMI now and our blood pressure, we're going to know this measure as well. And we'll have our FREND registry, the FREND marketing name. So thank you so much, Dr. Kaminsky. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Everybody else, stay with us. We're going to learn to drive. Yeah, we're going to learn to drive. You think you know how? Just wait a minute. We'll be right back. Okay, this is true. I think we really covered what we needed to cover.
Yeah, you were great to talk with, Adrian. So, you know, hopefully it'll be helpful for you.
Well, it was very helpful. My next guest is on, so you have to hang up. I can't hang up. We're still connected to our recording system. And we'll send to your PR people the information of when we where they can take this off the radio or listen, and we have an app, so they'll know everything. Okay?
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Adrian. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Is this Ellen?
Yep.
Is that the way you pronounce it?
Yep, Ellen.
Say it again.
Ellen. I just pronounce it.
Oh, Ellen Schold Davis.
They pronounce an E like an A.
Okay, Ellen. So it's Ellen Schold Davis, right?
Yep, that's right.
Coordinator Older Driver Safety Institute?
Coordinator Older Driver Initiative.
Initiative.
American Occupational Therapy Association.
Okay. Now, I have had folks on Older Driver Institute from the American Occupational Therapy Association before talking about driving. And I want to cover it again. First of all, it's the Safety Driver Awareness Week, December 5th
right.
and 7th, so we kind of celebrate that. But also because you're always coming up with new things, you guys, for this. And I think the fact that it's near the holidays is an important part of it. But this is a little bit new from you, this idea of staying engaged in the community. I want to make that connection when we talk, all right?
Okay.
Because we do have that issue of fear. That's the only reason I think people insist on driving. They just don't want to be isolated.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I think we want to talk about that. I also wonder, and I'm going to ask you off the air first, the screening and evaluations with an occupational therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to be blunt because this is the fountain of truth. Are
yeah.
people afraid to do that because they don't want to hear the truth?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's true. Some people want it because they want to understand what's going on. There are people that want to better understand the situation and don't want to hurt people. There really are those
right.
people. There
okay.
are people that don't want to know. I think part of it is a whole messaging, which is why it's so great you're having these shows. That I think my father's generation thought a license was for a lifetime. There was no
yep.
there was no talk of ever needing to keep up skills to maintain it. We know we have to maintain our pilot's license. We know we have to maintain other licenses. And it's just with our aging society where people are living longer, we actually have to be reintroducing to people the idea that you need to maintain your abilities or driving's not a good idea. But the isolation is often because there aren't solutions. There aren't options.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we're going to talk about this. Now, the way this goes is we're quiet for a few minutes. You're going to hear music. I'm going to introduce you and the topic. We'll have maybe about 8 or 9 minutes together. Then you may hear music afterwards. I try to talk and be the last speaker so I could toss it over the music. But should you hear music, just finish your sentence. They will hear you over the music, okay?
Okay.
And then we'll have a commercial, and we'll come for the second session, okay?
Okay.
That's the way it goes. Stuart, we are ready. Right.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg. We are back once again for the second wonderful half of our show. This is Generation Bold. This is the Fountain of Truth. And the way we have a wonderful older age is by staying truthful to ourselves, facing certain things, and taking advantage of everything that's around us to make whatever we have to face a little bit better. Well, one of the things we may have to face is the fact that we don't drive as well anymore. And I try to admit, so I'm admitting right now, I don't drive as well at night. I know that. I know that right away. And I make some concessions for it. But this is Older Driver Safety Awareness Week, December 5th through the 9th, actually. And we're going to celebrate the fact that we want to drive, we can't drive, with Aileen Scholl Davis. She's coordinator of Older Driver Institute, all part of American Occupational Therapy Association, which was founded, by the way, in 1917, if you think this is something new that just got drummed up. But the ability to do hand-eye coordination, the ability to keep present when you're driving, many of these things do have to do with what the American Occupational Therapy Association is all about. So if you wonder why they're talking about driving, that's why. And they do many, many studies. So thank you for being with us, Aileen. And I want to go right ahead with this. you've come up with a number of things that people can do for Older Driving Safety Week. And one of them we talked about off stage, so to speak, and that is screening and evaluations with an occupational therapist. What would that entail? Let's start with that and then talk about whether people are actually frightened to be evaluated. But what would an evaluation be like?
Sure. There's a couple of different services that fall under evaluation with an occupational therapist. Occupational therapy is part of your healthcare team, part of your rehab team. So it's possible that if you're noticing changes in how you're managing your vehicle, it's possible you're noticing changes in other things as well. Maybe forgetfulness, maybe having difficulty with just things not being as easy as they were. So if your physician referred you to an occupational therapist as part of your healthcare, we would be looking at vision, cognition, and physical ability to see if those are, if you're experiencing changes enough where we think it's impacting what we call function, where it's really affecting how you're able to do things. The next level of evaluation would be going to a driver rehabilitation specialist. That occupational therapist has advanced training in looking specifically at the areas associated with driving, your vision for driving, your physical ability for managing the controls, your cognitive ability to manage the driving environment, and they take you on the road. The idea of a driving evaluation by an OT is to figure out how you're doing and what could be improved. The idea of it is not trying, the goal is never to stop driving, the goal is to continue driving. Obviously and honestly, since this is a truthfulness show, sometimes the capacities have changed enough where driving needs to stop. But for many, there might be things we can do if we get to see you early enough.
So, you know, I want to dwell a bit on the second conversation we had during our little break, which is fear of evaluation. Our first guest, Dr. Kaminsky, was talking about getting evaluated with regard to heart respiratory. And recently we've been looking into all the new types, and a lot of ways, by the way, to spend money, on evaluating everything from your cognition, do you have Alzheimer's, your genetics with 23andMe, lots of evaluations. People are scared to be evaluated. They don't want to hear from an occupational therapist, oh, you can't drive, or you're deteriorating. So they just let it happen in their life. Now, you've done a lot of studies and looking into this kind of behavior, and I think it's very smart that you've made this week around the holiday season so other people in the family could have an awareness of what's going on with the older person in their life. But how do you speak to an older person to get them to go and get that evaluation if you think it's necessary? And they may not.
Absolutely, and it's such an excellent question. I do think there's more comfort probably with the younger folks on the word evaluation than there is for us as we age. I didn't grow up with evaluating everything, as I think people are more used to that term. I think that the evaluation of driving, I wish we use different words. You'll see it in the literature, screening, assessment. Part of that is to try to be a little softer in the language used. But the idea of really doing a spot check, we do go in, you know, ideally annually for our doctor, and that's to be evaluated, kind of how we're doing, taking a snapshot of how things are to see what we might need to tweak or help. And for driving, it is reasonable that since we haven't had a driving lesson, probably since we were licensed and maybe never for many seniors, that the idea that they might wonder, am I doing everything I can to keep myself safe on the road and actually to avoid a crash, because seniors injured in a crash can take them a lot longer to heal and maybe won't be able to recover at the same level as a younger person can recover more easily from a crash. So if we could try to soften the word evaluation, the idea of it is a snapshot, taking a look at how you're doing and then figuring out, is it bad habits? Because bad habits that were just bad habits could be dangerous habits as we age. Could it be not knowing? Really don't know how to navigate these roundabouts and showing you strategies of how to do that. Could it be the evaluation could be offering some equipment? You know, you've had a difficulty with that frozen left shoulder for a long time, we can move that blinker over to the right side so you don't have this problem of not being able to put on your blinker because it's too hard to reach. So evaluation, it should be evaluation for what we can do, but too often it's associated with taking away.
So there are solutions here. What we're bringing out and what Aileen Shoal Davis is bringing out is that this is not the beginning of the end. You come in and they can't wait to tell you that you can't drive anymore and where are your keys. This is the beginning of the beginning, where you actually do make adjustments. Look, nobody says that you can't have a grab bar in your bathroom. And if you don't have one, you have to move. You just put in a grab bar. Well, this is the same kind of thing. And I do like to, as I've said before, like to tell you that in my own life, I am shrinking. I'm shrinking like everybody else. Not a lot. I do a lot of work for that not to happen. But I do find I need the seats in a different position, even as a passenger, not just as a driver. But if you acknowledge that, you change the level of the seats or your next car. You get a car that works better for you. So these are really logical things that you guys listening would tell anybody else to do if they were having trouble driving. So you do it for yourself. Now, however, let's go back. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Could I just clarify one point?
Sure.
I'd like to make, and I think one of the areas of confusion can be, we were just describing a comprehensive driving evaluation by an occupational therapist. This is a therapeutic intervention. Sometimes we confuse that with the road test at the licensing agency or at the DMV. Now, the licensing test, the evaluation at the DMV is designed to measure if new drivers have the basic skills to get their license and hopefully will go on to get experience and become better drivers. That is a pass-fail test that's designed to measure basic skills. It's not in any way designed to do any of the things that I just talked about. So people need to understand the difference, and sometimes they think they're the same, and they aren't.
That's a very important point because you used the word fail. You don't fail with these evaluations. You get better with these evaluations. And nobody's taking the license away. You're learning how to continue being able to drive for as long as possible, if not forever. And I think that's an important difference.
It's a very important difference. And I don't want to avoid the fact that some people, we can't do enough for them. And stopping driving is the important thing. But the licensing agency who makes a decision on what criteria is required to be able to be licensed or not, not an occupational therapist or driving rehab program. But when you go into the state DMV, they have the authority that if you pass or fail, if you fail, your license is canceled. If you pass, it's not. So it's they're different services with different criteria.
Now, when we come back, we are going to talk about this very difficult issue that you just mentioned, Aileen, which is what if somebody really should not be driving? We can be as optimistic and, you know, Pollyanna as we want, but at some point, some people should not drive. I will tell you that I have a 92-year-old, 93 now, father-in-law, who not only drives, but until he was 87, he drove Porsches from one part of the country to the other, and he was their number one driver. So this is a very individual type of thing. And the only reason he stopped was he didn't want to do it anymore. So there you go. And it doesn't apply to everyone. But in family members do see it. And when we come back, we're going to talk about staying engaged in the community and how you can still get around even if you don't drive. And if you are the person who loves an older adult, how you can talk to them. Difficult topic, but it's the fountain of truth. Don't you go anywhere.
Because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
Okay, so this is very good, and I think you see where this is going to go next. We're going to talk about that staying engaged in the community portion of what you're promoting, and then we'll talk about how to talk about it. Okay?
Okay.
And is there any website or anything that you'd like to send the listeners to?
I think the Older Driver Safety Awareness Week website is an excellent resource because it lists out each day has a different theme, so it kind of sorts the resources by topic, and I think that can make them easier to access.
So I'm going to start with that, and you'll give them the website a couple of times. And we also put it on our website, okay?
Okay.
Stuart, we are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. Once again, hard to believe, but we're on our last segment. We are speaking with Aileen Shull Davis. She's the project coordinator over Older Driver Institute, American Occupational Therapy Association, and they do a lot of work to keep us aware and safe. And most people would not associate occupational therapy with driving, but it really is part of their mission in a big way. And they have created Older Driver Safety Awareness Week, December 5th through the 9th, and they have a wonderful website that will not only help you with everything we're talking about, but if you have an older adult loved one, and you think that there should be some discussion, maybe as much as an intervention. There's a lot of help here. So, Aileen, just tell everybody what that website is.
Please go to www.aota.org and then look down the page for Older Driver Safety Awareness Week. That's the easiest to say on the radio.
Understood. And as always, we'll have an article on it, and we'll have the website starting next Wednesday on our GenerationBoldRadio.com, GenerationBoldRadio.com, because Older Awareness Week is fun, and it's now, but the awareness has to go on forever. So we want you to have that information always. Now let's get to one of the biggest issues here, and I'll be telling you, I'm pretty upset. For years, Aileen, I've been going to big conferences on aging, and there are several wonderful ones all over the world. And transportation is always involved, and nothing ever happens. Year after year, there's a couple of things like we have locally called the Link, which takes people to some stores. Uber is trying hard to have accessible cars. They were even at the Washington Conference on Aging at the White House. But still in all, people are afraid that they're going to get isolated. You talk a lot about community involvement. I mean, realistically, how do we get around if we don't drive? What should we do in our lives to face this?
Well, what comes to my mind, the first thing I want to say in response to that is we're all going to age, and we all need to use these different transportation options. We can't wait to and hope that we have a good infrastructure that's just used for us. If you look at New York City or D.C. or Boston, everybody takes the different forms of transit, and that builds the structure. So one thing as we look ahead, we all need to ride the bus or use the system available so that they need to build more. We're asking for more, but then they come back and say the ridership is so low. The other problem we have is right now seniors, the studies show, tend to prefer family to drive them around. And this is becoming more of an issue because there's more people are working, and it's hard for families to be able to take the time to be the driver. So we're putting these needs in conflict. So you're absolutely right. Programs like Uber and these other rideshare services are pushing the envelope to try to build these resources, but it's a very difficult problem. And then just to state the what's an important thing to remember too is if you have a medical problem that is making driving not appropriate for you, you probably have difficulty using a regular bus or using public transit, and you need some more specialized or individualized services. So we really do need to continue to advocate in our local communities to have services that are senior-friendly and really prioritize getting our seniors out and about.
Yeah. There's two things going on here, and I'm going to make it very clear because I have been thinking about this for now, I'd say 35 years. First of all, what you said, Aileen, is I want to repeat this. When you go to programs, grants, even governmental organizations, and you say we need more transportation for what they call the elderly, I call it me, they will tell you just what you said. We've put it in, nobody shows up. So part of this is a mindset. Get out of the house. Being connected, being a volunteer, deliberately finding reasons to leave the home, even if it's that you break up your shopping and you go for meat one day and you go for milk the other day, so that you have a reason for leaving the house and using this transportation. You have an obligation. The more you do it, the more there will be for you. But then you have the other side, Aileen, which is the fact that we love to say we have longevity. We love to tell the world that we're the oldest, you know, we're a healthy country, and then we don't provide for it. So this is all one piece. You make some noise, and you will get it. But now let's go to the other, equally maybe more difficult, that you guys deal with all the time at the Older Driver Institute. Thoughts for the baby boomer child, the adult child, who's also listening, in dealing with issues that they detect maybe this holiday season with the older adult. I make a joke, say, watch your mailbox because grandma's coming. She may bump into it. But what do you say? How do you say it in a way that makes an impact, not just a fight?
Well, I think that being concerned with your loved one's safety is a very loving thing. And we need to work on thinking about it as being loving. As we protect our children and we protect our families, we need to protect our loved ones as they age. I think that for the baby boomers, we have to be careful to not jump to conclusions. Just because we saw mom have a fender bender or we see that there has been a dent in the car, what we want to do is seek data. And that gets back to our earlier conversation of the driving eval. And we do find many baby boomers are very happy to pay for the comprehensive driving evaluation because now they have data on which to act. And your mom or your dad was looked at specifically. Then when you have that data, what I encourage the family members to remember is you are not limiting dad if you're taking, if you're making sure that he doesn't have access to the car anymore if he's unsafe to drive. You are protecting him. You are being loving. It's a very loving move to make sure that driving stops. But we also then have to take the responsibility to take it to the next level, which is making sure our loved ones can get around. And that's where it becomes really difficult for families. Sometimes families may avoid having dad not drive anymore, even though he's been told not to drive by his doctor, because frankly, they're overwhelmed by the idea of having to drive them themselves.
Well, we'll have to stop there because it's a big, big topic, but it's all of a piece when you are active, when you're part of your community, when you go to your senior centers, you will generally have people and friends. And when you have money, you buy your transportation. So get out there, kids, and make it happen. Okay, this thing runs away so fast, you never know. But I think we really covered all the points.
Oh, was that it? Are we done?
Yeah, can you believe it? So,
well, I'm sorry. Yeah. Did I get off the rails a little bit there?
Not at
you,
all.
Or was that okay?
No. If you listen to it, you'll see that you finished exactly right.
Oh,
it was
good.
A complete
okay.
thought about the last thing that we had to discuss, which was how people help their family members, mm-hmm. and the evaluation. Like it was a full circle, because one of the major things was go back to the evaluation, get the data, right? And then make sure that if they take the keys away, or they won't take them away, but if they mm-hmm. are able to convince the older adult mm-hmm. to give the keys up, you need some kind of a family plan to make sure they don't stay isolated. Now, of course, what we didn't get to talk about, which is off the topic, is some people do have to move. They really don't have, you know, the ability, and they have to, that's why the over 55 communities and walkable cities and all that kind of thing is getting to be important. But this is what I mean. It's all one piece. If you lived in a walkable city, you would have a different attitude about your car than if you lived in a rural area.
That's right. That's right.
And your dependency would be different. So the whole idea of successful aging, you can't separate one piece of it from the other. But I thought it was perfect, and I think you'll love it when you listen to it. Okay?
Oh, good. I hope it did okay for you. Yes.
You did, but let me tell you that if you send me or your PR people, whoever, I think it was Katie Riley sent this to me.
Yes.
Any article, any website, it'll all be on the homepage on Wednesday of this week coming up.
Okay?
And she knows where to send everything. Good?
Okay. I'll send her an email. Thank you so much for inviting me to participate.
No, this is great.
I appreciate it.
I think driving in this country is one of the biggest issues of aging, so we'd love to have information on it. Okay?
And we avoid it. There's too much focus on the test. And we thank you for framing the test as useful today. This was, to me, I really appreciate the messaging of this. If you listened to something similar from 5 years ago, you wouldn't hear what we were just talking about. So thank you for doing that.
Interesting. And you made it very clear. That was good. Okay. Take care, and I'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.